Did you hear the news? LifeFlow has been named one of the best accounting and finance software products for 2024 by G2. And because of the support of listeners like you, LifeFlow is also on G2's list of the 100 fastest growing products of 2024. If you're thinking about implementing LifeFlow with clients soon, there's even more good news. G2 also awarded LifeFlow as most implementable for winter 2024. Stay tuned to hear more from our sponsor, LifeFlow, later in the episode.
Ever wished you could earn CPE credits while on the go? Introducing Earmark, the app revolutionizing the way accountants earn their CPE. Just listen to your favorite accounting and tax podcasts, whether you're driving to work, working out, or even doing chores. After you're done listening, take a quick quiz. Score 70% or higher, you've earned your CPE. It's that easy. Plus, with Earmark, you're not just ticking a box. You're actually learning valuable insights from top accounting podcasts. So why wait? Download the Earmark app now on iOS or Android and transform your listening time into CPE credits. Make the most of your day and stay ahead with Earmark. Higher education is already done. Like 80% of lecturers and professors in higher education are obsolete already. It's just a matter of time until we apply AI to do a lot of personalized, individualized education.
Coming to you weekly from the OnPay recording studio.
Hello and welcome back to the show. I'm Blake Oliver.
And I'm David Leary.
David.
Yes.
Are you a Wendy's customer?
Not anymore, but I used to be, because when I first started Intuit, the office, the only choice, there was only two restaurants. It was McDonald's or Wendy's. So you used to just do a lot of Wendy's for lunch. You could walk there, essentially, yep.
Mm. Well, Wendy's was in the news recently. The CEO was talking on some sort of investor call about how Wendy's is going to start experimenting with dynamic pricing, changing the price of menu items using digital displays throughout the day. And of course, it completely backfired and became a public relations nightmare for Wendy's, although you could make the argument that there's no such thing as bad press. But they were all over the news because the interwebs started going after Wendy's for surge pricing, which a lot of people really, really don't like.
Well, anybody's ever experienced, I mean, the most famous surge pricing is Uber.
Yes.
Like you go get an Uber one night and it's $180, right? And that's why people and their brain, they've really associated surge pricing with negativity.
Right. Right. It's having to pay a really high price when you really need something, which is painful. You need to buy a ticket last minute. The price is $500 when if you'd bought it 6 months ago, it would have been $50 to $100.
Airplanes, hotels, yeah.
What are other good examples of surge pricing that we see? Ticket sales. You want to go to a concert, right? If you didn't get your ticket right when the concert was announced, you're going to pay huge prices.
Retailers have been doing this. So
really?
You've probably seen like at Best Buy, those digital price tags they have everywhere.
I haven't been into a Best Buy for, I don't know, last time I went to one. Why would I buy electronics anywhere other than online? But go ahead.
Occasionally you want to touch it before Amazon ships it, maybe. I don't know.
I can just return it. But go ahead.
But stores, Best Buy, Kohl's, grocery store chains, they have these digital pricing and they can change it real time.
Okay.
Right? For whatever reason they need or desire to change the prices. And Amazon's been doing this forever. That's why you and I both could go to the same product on Amazon and we might see two different prices, right?
Yeah.
Dynamic pricing is everywhere. Right?
Depending on the inventory, the price goes up or down like really fast. And sometimes it can create funny situations where like something's 100 times more expensive than it should be. But anyway, usually it works, right? And we should say there are like positives to surge pricing, which is if you really need something last minute, you can get it, right? Like that's the economic theory of why surge pricing is good for consumers, is that if you need to get on that plane tomorrow to go to the funeral or go to that business event that was last minute, you can actually buy a ticket. Whereas if it was cheaper, it would already been sold.
Economists love it because it's true market balance. And this is why, you know, people get so upset when there's a hurricane and people are charging $25 for a bottle of water. But that keeps somebody from buying all the water.
Right.
So it's available for everybody. And so economists love this. But yes, as a consumer, even myself, I mean, I don't want to pay a surge price, right?
So getting back to Wendy's, when the Wendy's CEO talked about this and said, we're going to start doing this by the end of 2025. Prices will fluctuate depending on the time of the day. The investors seemed to like it, but then the internet did not. And here's a story on Axios titled, Why Fast Food Fans Flipped Out Over Wendy's Pricing. And I think we kind of described it, right? It's that I don't want to go into a Wendy's and see a price that's higher than I expected when I left the house, right? It's the expectations that hits you. Like, you need this thing, and now all of a sudden it's more expensive, and you have no choice, really. You got to go pay for it. What else?
I mean, I think the lesson on this, right? Because you and I have talked about surge pricing tax returns for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the real lesson here is don't call it surge pricing.
Right. Well, and that's the thing
call it early filing incentive or who knows, right? So you have to be very creative about this.
So the CEO of Wendy's, he didn't call it surge pricing. They called it like something else, dynamic pricing. But then surge pricing is the negative connotation, right? And that's what everyone started talking about. You know, Wendy's tried to clarify it. They tried to say, no, what this means is that it's actually, we're gonna lower prices during times of less demand, right? So if you go at an off hour, you're gonna pay less, right? That's probably how they should have characterized it. Like, we're gonna do dynamic discounts. We're gonna save our customers money, that sort of thing, right? People love saving money. They hate paying more as a penalty. It's psychological, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk about this in the context of dynamically pricing tax returns, something that we have talked about on this show before. The idea that firms could manage their workload, make more money by changing the price of a tax return during tax season, or really anything, an audit. When a client comes to you and they need a huge amount of catch-up work done in a very short amount of time, do you price that the same as if they had come to you 12 months ago and you're doing it every single month? I would argue no. That's crazy.
You'd argue no, you shouldn't do it, or you should argue nobody's doing it.
Well, I would say, okay, let's use that example of like, okay, I have a client that has a whole year of accounting work, because this would happen to me all the time because that was my business. They have a whole year or multiple years of accounting work, and they come to you and they ask you to do all the books real quick because I need to get a loan or I need to file my taxes or something like that, right? How do you price this? A lot of firms will actually charge that customer less than they would have if the customer had been a client every single month. They'll actually give them a big discount to do the cleanup work. And the rationale is, if we do it all at once, it costs us less because we're doing it all in bulk. We're doing it in a batch, right? Or we really want to get this big job, right? So we can't charge what we would have charged every single month. We can't simply take 12 months times the fee we would have charged them, and that's the fee to do the cleanup. And they discount. They actually charge less. But I would argue it should be more, because you're stepping in and helping out this client in their time of need.
Especially if they have this like deadline, like you need to do that. I have to get this bank loan, or I'm merging with another company. This has to be done by a certain day. Yes, if there's some time-based deadline that's ridiculous, you should charge more for that, to meet that deadline, because you're going to have to drop other work for other
exactly.
paying clients.
And while perhaps it might take less time than you'd budget every month to do this work, if you multiply how many hours you'd estimated throughout the year to spread it out versus doing it all at once, it's probably fewer hours to do it all at once, but it's still a lot more than you have capacity for necessarily, right? You may not have the capacity. You may have to work overtime. You may have paid people to sit around and have capacity in order to take on this kind of work. So everything says you should charge more for that, but most firms don't. They either charge the same or even less. And that to me is kind of crazy. And you could say the same thing about a tax return, right? There's a big difference between a client who signs up in December for you to do their tax return versus a client who comes in March or April or the day before, literally the day before. So how could we use dynamic pricing, surge pricing in an accounting firm to prevent that kind of behavior? Or get our money's worth, get our value for that. Maybe you take the client that comes in the last day, but you say, look, you want me to do your return before the deadline? It's going to be 10 times the usual price.
And you keep that capacity open, right? You just keep that open because you know one person's going to come in that might be willing to pay that price.
And it's just like the airline seats, right? As you get fewer seats, the prices get higher. Yep. Or in the case of Southwest, they have those four tiers of different pricing and they sell out the earlier tiers. So the only thing left is like the business price. Business select or whatever, right?
That's actually a more interesting way to do it for accountants because you know your capacity. We can do this many returns a year.
Yeah.
So the first 300 customers get it a little bit cheaper than the next 300, then the next 300, the last 100 pay.
I actually really like that. Yeah, that would be easy to manage, right? Because you could like number all the returns as they come in the door. And you could base it based on like when, not when the client signs the engagement letter necessarily, but it could be when they give you substantially all the documents you need to do the return, right? So you're incentivizing the client. If you get the docs to me in January, it's this price. If you get them to me in February, it's this price. If you get them to me in March, it's this price. If you get them to me in April, it's this price. And just have a very clear pricing system in your engagement letters that explains this.
Do you know any firms that are doing this? I mean, we've talked to a lot of firms that automatically file extensions and spread out the workload. They smooth the year out. But do you know anybody that's doing this type of pricing at all? Have you met anybody?
I would be curious to know if any of our live stream viewers do dynamic pricing or surge pricing in their returns. I don't know many firms that do this in a systematic way. And to me, it's like, if you want to reduce the busy season pressure, this would be a great way to do it. A lot of firms, right, like you can't do dynamic pricing if you charge hourly after the fact. If you charge after the fact at all, you can't do dynamic pricing, I suppose. I mean, you can try. You can try, you know, but the client will be like, what the WTF, right?
I feel like that was my experience with firms. I just got like a bill. I don't know. Like, is this the normal price? It wasn't like there was a website that stated the price I was going to pay. I just got a bill. I'm like, okay.
Right. Well, same thing happened to my father-in-law. Right. My father-in-law got the bill from his new tax preparer and they hadn't discussed the price up front. And he calls me and he's like, Blake, I just got this bill. Like, it seems like a lot. And I looked at it and I said, well, he's charging you about the same as TurboTax full service. And you got a CPA with 30 years of experience to do your return. I think you got a really good deal on this. And then he was okay. Right.
It's all perspective. I was thinking a lot because of a whole nother article. I was thinking about pricing on accountants' pages. And the reason I was thinking that got me there is, so the IRS has piloted their direct file pilot. So this is the, you know, the file your taxes for free. The IRS is building the website.
They built their own tax software.
Their own tax software.
Go figure.
In theory, this is what's going to compete with the TurboTax free, the H&R Block free, all the free file alliance software that's out there. So I just jumped in and I was going through the wizard. So let me go back two screens. So let's see if we're eligible to direct file. The good thing is for Blake and you and I, we're in Arizona. So we'll click on Arizona. It's just making sure we can do this. If we're using married files separately, we can't do it, right? I'll hit next. Then they talk about ID, so there's no fraud, blah, blah, blah. Then it talks about the income. And this is where it shows direct file only works if you have certain types of income. And it's very clear that a W-2, a 1099-G, SSA 1099, 1099 interest, boxes 1 and 3. But all the forms that if you have these forms, you can't use the direct file system.
Right? So
if you have a 1099 MISC or a 1099-R, 1099-K, if you have allocated tips, unreported tips, You can't use this system. And I was like, well, that sounds really similar to TurboTax.
Right.
Right? Where TurboTax has a list of the things you can use for their free TurboTax version and a list of things that they can't do. Right? So as soon as you have 1099 NEC income or 1099-G, you can't use the free TurboTax. You have to use the paid product.
Mm-hmm.
And this got me to thinking about accountants and their websites, right? So if you have your package is listed, should you list a column that says free return? Even if it has buttons to the IRS direct file or TurboTax,
right,
but show just what they'll do versus what you'll do in your package. And price against this, the because I
price
clearly
against
see
the free.
The government's going to do X for free, TurboTax, H&R Block. Everybody else is just going to probably match it, right?
Right.
They're not going to do anything extra for free. And like, so should you be pricing against that? Is kind of the what went off in my head.
I think so. I think anchoring pricing is great, and showing your value is great. Like, yeah, you can get this for free, but you can't get this for free anywhere else. That could work. I like it in theory.
Yeah. With the surge pricing, everybody's pricing pages are going to be very complicated.
Well, it can be really simple. There was an article on CPA Trendlines that suggested just bumping the price by 20% every month during tax season, right? So you get me... Now, there's an argument to be made that you should actually start with a higher price and give discounts for early because people perceive it differently, like a penalty.
That's what TurboTax does, yeah.
Right. So basically, TurboTax right now, if you go to their website, Intuit, they are experts at pricing. So there's like teams of people that are paid to do this, right, at tech companies. So they probably have figured it out. And they discount by like 50% at the beginning of the season, and then it goes up to the list price by the time it's the deadline, right? So you could basically say, you could double your prices on your list. So double your list price. So if you normally do a tax return for like, let's just use easy numbers, right? $1,000, make it $2,000. And then if you get me your docs in January, it's $1,000, 50% off. If you get them to me in February, you know, now it's $1,200. If you get them to me in March, it's $1,400, something like that, right?
Yeah.
Just easy price increases. And the penalty or the discount is like several hundred dollars, a few hundred bucks, which is enough to motivate most people to actually do the shit they need to do to get you what you need to do the return.
Yeah.
Simple psychology. So I would love to know if any of our listeners actually do this or try it next year and let us know if it works. I think it should work. In theory, this should work great. I wonder if there's ways that we could implement this in our business as well, right? We don't do any surge pricing, but we'd have to think about it.
Well, anyway, we kind of do in the Earmark app. If you wait till the last minute to do all your CPE and Earmark and you want unlimited CPE, you need to knock out all your CPE hours in a week, you have to pay for the app.
Like, right. I guess you have to subscribe, $139. Yeah. But if you do your CPE one a week for the whole year, you don't have to pay anything.
Exactly. So
we are extreme surge pricing. You don't even pay if you do it on time.
Yeah. This episode of the Accounting Podcast is sponsored by LifeFlow. I was talking to Beth Melcher of MoneyFit while at QuickBooks Connect, and she was raving about how LifeFlow's consolidation feature is saving her team 15 to 20 minutes per client every week. I love how LifeFlow's automated multi-entity consolidation is so simple to use. You can easily map multiple unmatching chart of accounts from multiple QuickBooks Online companies into one unified report. And once it's set up, LifeFlow works its magic, updating the consolidations automatically in real time, so you can focus on analysis using instantly updated data. LifeFlow can even consolidate financials that are different currencies, and the possibilities don't stop there. LifeFlow empowers you with flexible, powerful reporting tools to create customized dashboards that meet your specific needs. Build executive presentations, cash flow forecasts, and more with just a few clicks. To stop grueling over manual consolidation reports and to get 20% off your first 3 months, head over to accountingpodcast.promo/LifeFlow. That is accountingpodcast.promo/LIVEFLOW.
Let's move on to apps and tech news. We had huge news from both Sage and Xero, and perhaps some others that you have identified.
Intuit had news too.
Excellent. So Sage, let's start with Sage, because we did an exclusive interview with Aaron Harris, the CTO at Sage, which will be dropping on this podcast feed in a couple days. And you can hear from him directly about Sage Copilot, which is the new AI built into Sage Intacct and other Sage products, including products like Sage 50. They're rolling it out to all their products, even the old ones.
That was interesting, that yeah. It's not just their cloud product offering.
Yeah. So you brought a video to the show, David. I'm going to play this 1 minute and 33 second video about Sage Copilot.
Increase productivity and success with Sage Copilot. Your own AI-powered productivity assistant for small businesses. Let's see how it can help you unlock new possibilities. Sage Copilot is always ready, working 24/7 to help you get the most out of your business. And it's secure, knowing who you are, and only showing information you're allowed to see. Need to view outstanding invoices? Get the details you need quickly. Ticking another job off your to-do list? With insights at your fingertips.
Sending a reminder?
And saving We've you seen that precious a lot. Time.
Chasing customers? Prospects?
Sage Copilot quickly gives you the information and advice you need.
Which so quotes should I prioritize? Ahead.
Need instant access to your monthly insights? You can get
querying financials
to the answers, as well as tips on your next steps for faster, smarter decisions. Welcome to a new era of business.
So, as we've seen with other AI products, a lot of this is around communication, sending reminders to clients, drafting emails, creating quotes, stuff like that. So, takeaways, David.
I mean, I think in general, at a high level, these are all starting to look the same. This high level, like set an appointment. Everybody uses that same example. So-and-so didn't submit their expense report, or so-and-so is missing their timesheet. Would you like to send them a reminder? That dance type stuff. But what struck me when we spoke to Aaron and when I went to their press conference earlier in the week is how they're talking about, like, they're going to have the AI do really good tasks instead of it just being less like, here's all your accounting data, start asking it questions, like very specific tasks, whatever that might be, right? There might be one that's just like a miniature bot that's good for collections, and maybe another little interface that's good at cash flow projections or whatever. So they're really trying to carve it down into little bots versus a big chat.
Yes. And based on what I know about how these customized AI assistants work, it's a great way to approach it, because if you want accuracy, you got to really specialize and train that bot in a very specific area or task. And so sending reminders is a great example. Aaron gave us an example that I hadn't thought of yet. I can't remember what it was. Here it is. When you log in the morning to say Sage Intacct, if you are the person who processes bills and invoices, they've already got an OCR system that pulls in all the bills every day and enters them into the system. And you used to have to go review all of them and check every single field. Anyone who has run an accounting firm practice that uses like bill.com understands what I'm talking about. It is so tedious. You get all these bills coming in for clients, and whoever is processing those or reviewing them has to go and make sure the date's correct, the amount's correct, the all the stuff's correct. And inevitably, they start to slack and stuff gets in there past the human review that's wrong. The amounts might be wrong, right? And that's embarrassing because it goes to the client and it's wrong. Well, now with AI, the AI does the initial review and flags potential issues for the human to look at. That is an incredibly useful example of AI agents in an existing process we already have. I love that.
And this is where, you know, it's not going to replace everybody's full job. It's going to replace 5 hours of crappy work over here for that person, 5 hours of crappy work over here for somebody else. Yeah.
When I worked in the big firm, we had one person whose job was just to process bills all day long to review the OCR. And she used to do the data entry. And then we moved her on to just reviewing the data entry that had been done. But that's so tedious. It's almost more tedious than doing the data entry in some ways, because you have to be so focused. And she would make mistakes. You know, you just can't hire somebody who has, like, nobody can be on all day
volume.
Long.
It's a volume thing. Yeah.
So having the AI do it and surface the exceptions is good, because there's actually studies that show that when there are lots of errors in like a data set, or a lot of exceptions in something we are shown, we're really good at spotting the differences. Like I just heard about a study where if you show a bunch of faces to people, and some of the faces are threatening and some of them are not threatening, people are very good at picking out the threatening faces, right? The scary people that you should watch out for. But if you reduce the percentage of scary people and faces in the data that they're given and only show them infrequently, people get really bad at spotting them. Works the same way in financials, right? If there's only a small number of errors and like 98% of what people are looking at is good, they're going to miss the errors. But if you show them only the errors, they're going to be really good at fixing those. So great example. Let's move on to Xero. Xero also announced an AI, and you said it has the best name of any AI so far.
Best name. So it's Just Ask Xero, but it's Jax, J-A-X.
I love it.
And to me, it makes a lot of sense. I know if I go back, the second Clippers Connect, and they were trying to, was it Hey QB or they were, I don't know what the name was, but it wasn't great.
The one where it was the guy in his Tesla.
The Tesla,
asking,
Like
early, using QuickBooks.
Early concept videos, early concepts. Hey QB or whatever it was. Like Jax is a really, really smart way to do that name. And there's a video of this as well, right?
Yeah. So let's watch the video.
What if you could get back to what you love?
Jax, edit the wedding quote to include 5 more centerpieces.
What if you had a smart business companion that was with you everywhere? What if your routine tasks could be automated? Done faster, smarter, and with peace of mind.
This is adding late fees to invoices.
So you can keep your business moving and reclaim your time so you can focus on creating.
Great work, guys. We're on schedule.
What if you could spend less time billing and more time building?
Did you get my email?
About adding the extra cabinet?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Nobody ever gets your email. Generating invoice. Who is it for? Generating invoices.
Would you want to take care of it right now?
Sure. This is one of my favorite
Tap
shots.
To pay. That's
this
cool.
One right here. Can I get the drone footage for this last sequence?
See your priority tasks each morning.
We're seeing a task list to review.
And have them automated and streamlined for you.
Finding discrepancies in, what was that? I didn't catch it.
Get personalized insights wherever you are.
Jax, give me the latest cash flow projections.
Jax is in the
Based
Google
on
Hangout.
These projections, you can hire those 2 new employees you want.
Great.
You can hire
them. You also mentioned wanting
okay,
to grow
that's
in
bullshit.
New markets.
That's bullshit right there.
That. Awesome.
There's no way.
And what if starting up was as easy as...
Okay, filling out your profile. That's,
do more of what
that
you
makes
love.
Sense. Easy, you could do that.
Get back
info.
To where it all began and unleash the potential of your business. It's all possible. Just ask Xero.
Jax. Your new AI business companion, coming soon.
And we'll see the beta version later in 2024. So looking forward to seeing this probably at ZeroCon this summer. Maybe we'll be able to see it and play with it a little bit. these videos like this are just over-promising.
Right, because it's not a real product yet. And the part that was just totally off, they shouldn't have done, in my opinion, was where the person asked, like, you know, give me my financial analysis. And then the Xero does, Jax does analysis, says, oh, yeah, you can hire 2 people. Are you kidding me? You don't have the information in Xero to do that analysis. That's like you need to do a financial statement, 3-way financial statement model to give that answer to somebody with confidence. It's not going to do that, you know? So here's where I would like to see Xero focus. Dear Xero product people, we know you're all listening to this show. So as a Xero user myself, this is what I would like to see you do the AI, have the AI do. When I go into that bank reconciliation screen and I see all those transactions, you know, there are some suggestions that are made, but they are not very good. They don't work all the time. I mean, I still have Xero recommending that I match practice ignition deposits to specific invoices when there's a whole rule set up to put those payments into a clearing account. They should not be matched to invoices. They should go into a clearing account. But Xero still recommends that they match them to invoices, even though there's a bank rule. That's just dumb.
It's the same thing in QuickBooks. The bank fee comes down, and if you have two transactions on the same day with the same amount, all hell breaks loose. They cannot figure it out. Even if the memo has a different memo, one memo says Blake, one says David, it just can't figure it out. I'm like, come on.
So product people, stop trying to build like something that is clearly impossible to do with this technology. And don't let the marketing people pull you in that direction. Okay? As a marketing person myself, I will tell you, they will try to make you do the impossible. Focus on the small, tedious tasks like Sage is doing. Focus on that bank rec. Make that bank rec where Xero in the morning gives me all the transactions that came in and says, here's our recommendations for how to code everything. Do you want to change anything? Here's the confidence level we have in this. Hit OK and accept them all into the register. Why not do that? You could totally do that. Okay, fix bank recs. Fix matching transactions. Make them match better. Like I still have issues where they don't match right. It'll choose a date that's like a month off. That makes no sense. And there's a transaction that's already closer to the date, right? The logic is just clearly broken, and they're not using AI for that.
I have some good news for you before you continue your soapbox. They had a companion blog post that they came out with that said how Gen AI will shape the future for our customers. So this is on the Xero blog. And they talk about how on their investor day, they outline their approach, how they'll integrate AI to our product to help better manage your accounting needs. There are three key areas, and I'm going to just skip to the one bullet, Blake. Automating and streamlining important but repetitive and time-consuming accounting tasks, including bank reconciliation.
Hallelujah. Thank you.
This episode of the Accounting Podcast is sponsored by Zoho Practice. Introducing Zoho Practice, the all-in-one practice management platform built to streamline accounting firm operations. Zoho Practice saves you time chasing clients by automating reminders and requests to get you the documents and clarifications you need when you need them. Staff and clients stay connected through a centralized communication hub to resolve accounting queries faster. Seamless timesheets and billing translate billable hours into invoices with just a few clicks, and robust document management means no more digging through piles of paper to find what you need. Beyond workflow efficiency, Zoho Practice also enables real-time financial visibility across clients thanks to seamless integrations with Zoho's accounting tools, allowing you to gain actionable insights to identify and resolve reporting inconsistencies quickly. Whether ensuring tax compliance, monitoring cash flow, or simplifying collaboration, Zoho Practice is the unified solution to manage all aspects of an accounting practice. To explore how Zoho Practice can save time, enhance oversight, and help your firm work smarter for free, head over to accountingpodcast.promo/Zoho. That is accountingpodcast.promo/ZOHO.
We can move on now.
Do you want to talk? QuickBooks also had news this week.
About AI.
No, not AI.
Okay, let's talk about it.
They announced a new product, though, that kind of was a little confusing. Have you heard the word this week, solopreneur? QuickBooks solopreneur.
Oh, somebody was confused about what is the difference between QuickBooks self-employed and QuickBooks solopreneur.
So the good news is I have enough background to understand what QuickBooks self-employed was. And I confirmed a couple thoughts with a friend of the show, Jessica McCracken, today over some text messaging. So I have a really good understanding of QuickBooks solopreneur as well now.
And she works at Intuit, so she's got the inside.
Yeah, she's on the accountants team.
Cool.
So if we go back to, it's probably a decade ago now, Alex Chriss, who's now the CEO of PayPal, he really wanted to go after these gig workers. This is the start of TaskRabbit, the start of DoorDash, the start of Uber and Lyft, right?
Yeah.
And those gig
people who have like no money, they're great customers for your SaaS product because they will never pay for it. But continue.
Yeah. So they created a product and it was really built originally off of Mint. So Mint was the personal finance product. And a lot of those people, if you're doing an Uber or Lyft situation, you're just making that money's going straight into your bank account.
Right.
So really what this was it was Mint under the covers with a QuickBooks interface. And actually, the work they did on that interface, I think, eventually the UI principles moved towards QuickBooks, really, right. In a way. QuickBooks started to look more like that product.
But it wasn't really QuickBooks under the
It was
interface.
Never QuickBooks. And it would track some mileage, and you could swipe transactions left and right if it was personal or business, right? It was designed to hook up to your personal bank account and report things out. But it was never designed for businesses.
Right.
So there was never an upgrade path to other QuickBooks products. There was no APIs because it was never QuickBooks.
Right.
Now, you know, decade later, they're shutting down Mint and making people move to Credit Karma. And this goes back when I was into it, like why was this never QuickBooks to begin with? Finally, in 2024, they've now introduced QuickBooks Solopreneur, which actually is QuickBooks, Blake. Look at this. I'm going to share my screen.
So it's a scaled down.
I signed up for it today.
It's a scaled down QuickBooks. And my number one question is going to be, can I upgrade? Like,
yes.
Let's say, because I started as a solopreneur and then I became not a solopreneur. And so I needed to be able to migrate.
So I signed up today and
do you need to tell me something, David? Are you quitting Earmark?
Like, no, I just created a new gig this morning. Brand new
side gig. What's your new side gig? How are you going to?
I have no idea, but I bought fuel for $100. I don't know what my side gig is just yet. And
you're going to become an Uber driver.
Actually, I chose home remodeling as my category as I was going through the wizard. But looking at the URL, it's truly QBO, right? Based on the URL structure.
Okay. Yeah, I see it.
If I get into, there's not really a register per se. Right. This is a bug because I think I only put this transaction in once, nonetheless.
But you got a list of transactions. That's like a register.
Yeah, like a register. If I go to reports and I run a profit and loss, and I like click, look, you can change between cash and accrual.
It's double entry.
I can hit the little gear to customize the report and go to the filters. And if you look under distribution account, I can choose like real chart of accounts. Like this is QuickBooks. This is QuickBooks. I'm willing to bet, unless they've turned it off or hid it, a developer could actually read and write data possibly through the API. Like this is a huge victory for all accountants because self-employed never fit in the universe of accountants because it was never QuickBooks. And this is a huge victory, I think.
So this is just stripped down transactional accounting. I import my transactions in the bank. I code them. Can I reconcile? Because if I can't
reconcile... I did not hook up a bank account, so I don't know.
Okay.
I did not. I'm assuming that if I hooked up a bank account, I'm going to get a very similar view of the bank feeds that I get in QuickBooks. That I did not hook up a bank account.
Well, this is critical, right? If you can't reconcile, it doesn't work for... Okay, let's see.
So I did do the onboarding interview, and the one thing that I think Intuit's missing the boat on is most people that are in this phase... they probably still have commingled bank account. And
unless they have a good accountant.
But then they probably won't be jumping onto this.
That's true.
That means they already have the regular QuickBooks.
Right.
Like this is a real opportunity to set up a business for success. Like just force them. Like you don't even get to use this unless you open a QuickBooks checking account or connect to a business account.
So it has QuickBooks checking features.
It does, but it's not in the wizard. It's not like I think... you push people to this right away because it just sets them up for success long-term.
Yeah.
Right? You put them on the business checking right away. But the good news is there's a path. I even went to the subscriptions and I think the UI might be broken, but I go to subscriptions and billing.
Right.
And it shows my subscription. But if I scroll down on the page, it says discover more. But if I click it, it's the UI is broken. It doesn't show me anything more. I'm assuming it's going to show me the other plans I can upgrade to.
So it has double entry accounting. I don't know if you can reconcile it. You can categorize business versus personal transactions. So I guess you import all your transactions. But I wonder how it would work if you migrate. Anyway, we got a lot to cover, so we can't get into that. Anything else to add about QuickBooks?
Not specifically, no.
All right. Well, I saw news from Zoho. Zoho is getting into practice management. This was reported in Accounting Today. Val Steed, the company's director of accountants, briefed Accounting Today on its comprehensive practice management system, which is aimed at small and mid-sized accounting practices. And the reason you might want to pay attention to this is because Zoho is very affordable compared to everything else out there. And I just spoke to one firm owner who runs an international practice helping expats with tax on my Earmark podcast, who uses Zoho. And it's like $30 a month for everything for all of his people, right? For each one. Very affordable for, you know, like...
I think Zoho One is like $50 a month and you get access to 110 apps. It's crazy how much stuff that Zoho does.
So Zoho Practice is only $5 per user for firms with more than 5 users. And if you have fewer than that, it's totally free. So most of our listeners and most accounting firms are fewer than 5 people. And so you could potentially try this, use this for completely for free. It's a brilliant way to price, I think. And of course, you know, if you get onto this practice management system, then you'll probably want to use Zoho Payroll, Zoho Expense, Zoho Mail, Zoho Docs, right? They have the whole suite. It's like an ERP system.
Instead of getting the Microsoft 365 stack or getting Google Docs, you're getting an equivalent stack, right? Yeah. It has chat. It has its own version of Zoom. Everything you need to run a firm, Zoho builds now.
Yep. So let's take a look at their website and just see what's included in the features. So this is Zoho Practice. You can find it at zoho.com/practice. Features that make your practice perfect. They've got a CRM for your clients. You can assign staff to clients and tasks. You've got all the client communication in one place, access all client emails, comments, tasks, documents, and staff associated with a client in one place. Client collaboration. There is a request feature. You can make requests of clients. You can create questionnaires. You can have chats via, you can share documents via encrypted chat with clients. Digital signatures are in there. You can connect Zoho Books for your practice to all this stuff so you can see all the financial details about your clients, like, you know, bill them and all that stuff. There's task management. I think I mentioned that. You can have recurring tasks, task templates, bulk update tasks. There's time tracking in there for the time trackers. I'm not against time tracking. I really do think it's okay. I just don't like it as a performance management system or a billing system necessarily. Secure document storage, dynamic client customization. What does that mean? Custom fields. Ooh, I love that. Got to have lots of custom fields. Email templates. Integrations. You can integrate with Outlook. It integrates with all their other stuff, the signature, e-signature stuff, automations, audit logs, activity trails. So anyway.
Yeah. But what I think is great about this is it's not locked into like, oh, if I use Zoho Practice Manager, I've put all my clients on Zoho Books.
No.
I can have clients be on QuickBooks or Xero. I can have them and bring them all into one dashboard. And I actually think this is a flaw of QuickBooks Online's Accountant Edition's mindset. Like, if I'm going to use QuickBooks Online for my firm, the Accountant Edition, to manage all my clients, if I have a client on Xero, let me add them to that dashboard too.
Yep.
Because chances are that if they might be on, they could be on Xero, but maybe their payroll is on QuickBooks Online payroll, or maybe their taxes is done, it shifts data over to ProConnect, who knows? But this like closed ecosystem for a dashboard of clients doesn't make a lot of sense. If you really want to be the portal for all the firm's clients, you got to let other accounting software packages appear as well.
Boring Accountant says, Zoho Analytics are an extra add-on. I don't see that in the integrations, and I don't see that in the features list. So I'm going to guess yes. I don't know. They've got financial insights, so I don't know if what that means. Maybe you can find out and let us know. Any more app news for this week? The FTC has also gone after H&R Block over their free online filing claims. It's not just Intuit and TurboTax getting hammered for that. The FTC lodged a complaint against H&R Block, accusing them of misleading marketing practices. Just like Intuit, H&R Block promoted free online tax filing services that often weren't free and deleted customers' data when they attempted to switch to cheaper products. That was always the way they got you. You'd spend all this time putting in all your info, and then you get to the end, they say, oh, you need this credit, this education credit. You don't qualify for the free product. Click here to pay. And if you wanted to do the free one, like say you don't, you'd have to like start over, right? Or actually, no, it would be if you went into the paid product from the paid website, you couldn't get to the free product even if you qualified for it.
You couldn't work backwards.
You couldn't work backwards, yeah. They basically made it difficult to downgrade. But, you know, hopefully all this is going to go away once the IRS actually, you know, builds this product for, you know, the 80% of Americans or whatever, half of Americans who really just have very, very simple tax returns and should be able to file for free like everywhere else in the world.
This episode of the Accounting Podcast is sponsored by Client Hub. Client Hub is workflow software for taking your accounting firm to the next level. Client Hub is both amazingly powerful yet amazingly simple. With tax season in full swing, you need tools to work efficiently, keep clients happy, and help your firm run smoothly. Client Hub helps manage your firm's workflow, track time, triage email, get e-signatures, and more. My favorite feature is the AI built-in that saves tons of time. Client Hub can automatically draft email replies to common client questions, and the new magic workflow creates detailed task checklists and instructions for any new client work or unusual requests. Beyond the amazing AI, Client Hub's seamless client collaboration makes it easy to resolve QuickBooks uncategorized transactions. The simple modern interface means your team can start using Client Hub in no time, and with mobile apps, tracking tasks and communicating with clients is easy for everyone on your team. It's even easy for clients too. To start your free trial of Client Hub's amazingly powerful yet amazingly simple workflows, head over to accountingpodcast.promo/clienthub. That is accountingpodcast.promo/CLIENTHUB. I have one that's kind of an AI-ish story, if you want to jump to that, unless
sure.
you have more news.
Well, the only other thing I want to get to is we did a listener survey, and I have the results of it. So we just need to save like some time at the end for that.
There'll be still time for that. Perfect. All right. So this headline was kind of out there a bunch of different ways, but the summary of the headline, I thought Going Concern summarized it best, the way they said that there's a study. And so I'll read the Going Concern headline. Study, : ChatGPT won't be replacing accounting professors in the near future. And there's other versions of this, and I'll open up the article here. This was another article. It says, expert test if AI can help teach students accounting. And it has, this is a professor that's at Charles Darwin University in Australia. And it's a picture of him hiding behind all his accounting textbooks and tax textbooks. And, you know, I don't know if he wrote all these, if these are just his. And he has this like grin, like he outsmarted the AI. He almost has like that grin, right?
Yeah.
But if you start reading like what the way they came to this conclusion, I don't think it was done properly. So what they did is they provided 5 numerical and 5 narrative-based multiple choice questions. So it'd be 10 questions based on introduction financial accounting and 10 for advanced financial accounting.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave it one question at a time and then got back an answer. And it only, you know, hit the typical numbers, which is 80% right. But I don't think that's the way to determine if it could be an accounting professor, Blake.
Whether it can answer and explain questions, like multiple choice questions?
Yes.
Yeah, that's totally ridiculous.
So
that's not how you learn accounting.
So this morning I said, well, let me open up ChatGPT. So I this is like not a lot of thought. This was just rattled off at 5 a.m. on half a cup of coffee. And I said, I went to ChatGPT, you're an introduction to accounting professor. Can you create a lesson plan for accounting students that have zero accounting experience? And ChatGPT created a 4-week course for introduction to accounting. Week 1, day by day, what we would cover. Introduction, what is accounting? Day 2, day 3, the accounting equation. Day 4, we get into T accounts, right?
Yeah.
It has week 2, reconciling, adjusting entries, week 3. Built out a whole course,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty impressive. So then I said, hey, this is a great outline, but can we really create just the instructional content for week 1, day 4, which is the double entry system? Because that's where accounting classes go off the rails,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Like that, here's a T account and it just goes off the rails.
People don't get it and then they fail through the rest of the class because they don't understand debits and credits.
So it created all the instructional content on the double entry system for me.
It's amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
The rule of thumb, the T accounts gave me, I asked it for some examples of T account transactions. It gave me the T account transactions. Mm-hmm. And then it's talked about splitting the students up in groups and going on and having a Q&A and active discussion. But then I was like, you know what I really need is T accounts. So I said, hey, can you give me some examples and tables of the T accounts? And I have these great visuals now. Instead of me writing it on a whiteboard, it made the
beautiful.
T accounts for
and
me.
It did it in Markdown format.
Markdown, so it's perfectly lined up.
Yeah.
It's perfect. And I was like, beautiful. Okay, that's great. And I was like, well, can you also show a table ledger of those examples that hit the cash account? And it gave me a ledger with the debit and credit and the balance.
Yep.
And I was like, well, that's great. What about a profit and loss statement and balance sheet? And it gave me those as well. Like, I could teach an accounting, intro to accounting class with ChatGPT.
Or you could be a student and you could ask ChatGPT to be your personal accounting tutor and teach you all of this stuff. Now, the AI assistant might have to get trained, and it would be much better if it was trained on specific accounting textbooks and given specific instructions for how to respond. But yeah, it could totally do this.
But out of the box, this is pretty
impressive. It's insane. It's insane how good it is. Yeah.
But I don't understand, like, this, like, egotistical professor mindset of, like, we're so great, right? And it's like, no, what you do is not that impressive. Like, what I got here is probably what I had at the community college for Accounting 101.
I think very similar. Higher education is already done. Like, 80% of lecturers and professors in higher education are obsolete already. It's just a matter of time until we apply AI to do a lot of personalized, individualized education.
Because, or it starts to write all their papers for them.
Think about how
they don't need to publish anymore.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different thing. But let's just look at accounting education, how inefficient it is. Accounting professor or lecturer gets up in front of a class of dozens or even hundreds of students and just talks for an hour or two. And the students have to go home and read a textbook and then do problem sets to learn. That's a really efficient way to do it when you have to disseminate the information from one person speaking to a bunch of other people. And then they can ask questions, right? And you do office hours and whatnot. But, like, imagine if instead of having one professor for 100 students, every student could have their own professor. And that professor, that AI, could customize the learning plan specifically for that student based on what they know and what they don't know and how they answer questions and what they get wrong and what they get right. You can go so much faster because the one professor talking to a whole class is talking to the middle 80%. And the 10% at the bottom who don't understand what's happening and the 10% at the top who are super bored don't get value. And I was one of the 10% at the top. I'm not afraid to say that.
This is the day. Day four, when they start putting T accounts on the board, is where people decide they love or hate accounting.
Yeah.
Like this one day determines who becomes an accountant.
And if your professor isn't able to explain it in a way that works for you, you don't get it, and then you can't follow the rest of what's happening, and then you get left behind.
And when we have an accountant shortage. It all goes to that day, that one day.
Yeah. So this is, you could actually train an AI to teach accounting, I think. And it'll take time. Education companies will have to, like, figure out how to do it. Maybe we'll figure out how to do it, David, after we conquer continuing education. But, like, these professors are in for the ones who continue to teach the same way, just like everything else, right? The professors who use AI will replace those. The educators who use AI will replace those who don't. And given how traditional academia is and how slow moving it is, I think most of them won't, and they will be obsolete. And people aren't going to pay for it, right? Why would I pay for this expensive higher education that's, like, slower and less customized than one I can get from an app? That has access to all of the world's information, which is way more than this guy has access to.
Yeah. And if you think about it, like, it's speed.
Yeah.
Right? Like in the state of Arizona, like, because you have your degree, you could go be an adjunct professor, I think, anywhere. And you could go teach accounting 101.
Yeah.
But it would take you a while to build your curriculum, but you could probably build it in 3 hours with ChatGPT. You'd have your whole lesson plan done. I mean, I kind of did it already, most of it.
We're already doing this in a very small way at Earmark. You know, we can build entire courses, 1 hour CP courses, using AI. And then, you know, obviously we tweak it, we customize it, but it takes out like 80% of the work we used to have to do.
It's a different perspective. It's what can these AI tools do for you versus I'm gonna stump it and show how smart I am.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And also they're using just like the generic ChatGPT, not one that's been specifically trained on accounting. So if you trained an AI model on accounting and that's all it was doing was like being an accounting professor, it would totally crush those questions. I guarantee you.
Yeah.
This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. So, David, we have a little time left. I want to go through our listener survey. Thank you to everyone who completed our listener survey. We got enough responses that I will call this statistically significant. Hundreds of responses. So thank you very much. I will put this on the screen because I want to show you what I did with it. It's an AI example, like a really cool example of AI. So we did our survey in a tool called Servicate, which has an analysis tab. We had 146 responses.
And you're not sharing just yet. I don't know if you knew that or not.
No, I gotta get it up here. Let's see, share screen, window. There it is, share. So like we get this analysis tab and it's tables and charts, bar charts,
Based on the answers.
Based on the answers, right?
Dumping out the data. Yeah. But we have to interpret it and go through it.
Right. So I'm going through this. I'm like trying to get an idea, like generate a profile. I'm trying to like get an image in my mind of who is a typical listener.
Well, please tell me you took the survey data and it drew something with Dolly, our listener.
We could do that, actually. I want to try that next. But I didn't do that. I'm just working with text here. So what I did is I PDF'd the analysis page, right, with all the charts and the tables. And I dropped it into Claude. And I said, I'm the co-host of the Accounting Podcast. Here are the results of our listener survey. Give me a detailed analysis of our listeners based on the survey. Now, this doesn't have any listener information like emails. We didn't even collect emails or names or anything like that. So it's just the results and then some of the comments. And here's what Claude did for me. Claude said, based on the survey results, here's a detailed analysis of the Accounting Podcast listeners. Demographics. Listeners tend to listen frequently, with almost 50% listening to every or nearly every episode. About 20% listen a few times per month, so there is a loyal listener base.
Thank you.
Now, what certifications, licenses do they hold? 44% are CPAs, and 42% are QuickBooks/Xero advisors, and 18% hold some other certification. There could be overlap there. Listeners tend to be accounting professionals of some kind, rather than students or casual listeners. That's good to know. People aren't listening to go to sleep. That was one of my theories. How old are they? Most listeners, over half, are between the ages of 35 and 54. Gender is evenly split. Where do they work? 30% work for themselves, and 29% work at public accounting firms. So a majority of listeners likely work in public practice settings. Over a third work at companies with less than 10 employees. Listeners tend to hold senior roles like partner, manager, CEO, or controller, though there are also more junior roles represented like staff accountant and bookkeeper, and over 90% are based in the U.S. That was so helpful. I now know very clearly in my mind who our listeners are. And we could probably ask it to generate a, what do they call it in marketing? A
persona?
Persona. We could like have it create a persona for us too. Preferences. What do listeners want to hear about? We asked you that. Listeners ranked technology news and updates as the number one most interesting topic, followed by interviews with accountants, and then how to grow an accounting business. So that tells me we need to focus on these interviews, and we've been doing a lot of these bonus interviews. I want to get more practitioners, more of our listeners on the show. So if you've got something to share, if you've got something that you have an opinion
if you
on
search price.
If you do search price, we'll if you have on. Like a tip yes. you want to share with other forward-thinking practitioners, send us an email and we'll get you on the show. theaccountingpodcast@earmark.me. That's theaccountingpodcast@earmark.me. M-E. The least popular topics, career advice for industry accountants. I guess because we just don't have that many industry accountants listening. I mean, we do have like, it's not small. It's like, I think 16% according to the survey or, less, but it's less than 20%. And people also are not fans of cryptocurrency or blockchain.
Which is good. We didn't talk about it once this episode until you just said it now. So we're learning.
Summary of the feedback. Listeners like the authenticity of the hosts, the candid, honest takes on the profession, and the variety of relevant, up-to-date topics covered. They like getting news and updates on accounting tech/software. That seems to be highly valued. And listeners appreciate the candor on issues like the talent pipeline crisis. So in summary, the core listener base are accounting professionals working in public practice roles, mainly CPAs and advisors, running small businesses, and interested in technology updates and practice management content. So I have resolved.
All right, Blake, you have 60 seconds left. Put that in and create an image of our listener. Put that in the AI.
Well, I can't do it in Claude, but I guess I could go to ChatGPT.
Jump over.
Jump over there and say, given this, I got to put this back on the screen.
To paste that back in.
And I will, given this profile.
Because our listeners can see us, but we can't see that.
Podcast so listeners. Generate an image to represent our typical listener. Let's see if it can do this. Creating image. What do you think it's going to do, David? Do you think it's going to do like the stereotypical old white guy sitting at his desk with a stack of papers?
I don't know. I think it's going to get confused because there's the one sentence that says it could be half the audience is male, half is female. It'll be interesting to see what we get. While this is chugging along here, you discovered prices of AI and the cost to do this exercise we're doing, right?
Oh, yeah. This is so fascinating. So I've been experimenting with the OpenAI API, connecting it to our various systems to do AI tasks. And it's expensive to run these prompts. Like if I upload a podcast transcript and ask it to like create a summary, that can cost like 10 to 40 cents. So every prompt that you put into ChatGPT is worth like that much. At least that's what they charge for it through the API. But you only pay 20, 30 bucks a month for it, right? So do the math. I wonder how many subscriptions, you know, it's costing them more to do the processing than they're getting in subscriptions. But you had the argument, or you made the argument, David, that maybe it's like
a gym membership.
And like a lot of people subscribe and they don't use it very much. But yeah. If you use it a lot, like, you know, I was working through generating like CPE courses and it's like $15, $20 to make one. So it's certainly cheaper than a human, but it's not cheap.
I'm going to have to freeze your spend cards here so you don't overspend.
I set myself a limit of $100 on the experiment. So we got our image back. The image representing the typical listener of the accounting podcast has been generated, showcasing a professional environment where a group of accounting professionals are engaged in various activities that reflect the interests and demographics of your podcast audience.
But nobody's listening to a podcast. Nobody has headphones in.
It's like a bunch of people in business attire, like gray suits and... oh, look at this. This woman here is wearing one of her legs has like man's shoes.
And male and
one
pant
has,
leg.
One has like the female heels. That's pretty
and
funny.
A short pant leg.
Look, this guy has. This guy's wearing heels.
All right.
I love it.
They all have a device in front of them.
Yeah, they're all sitting in like this glass, big open glass space with tables. Like it looks like a WeWork kind of vibe, you know. And on the wall, there's a mural of all these like diagrams that look something like accounting and computers. And there's
and
these...
they're all white people. Did you notice that?
Oh God!
None of our data was said anything about that.
It didn't, but it just assumed that's racist
because they're accountants.
So you know, it's like Microsoft is or no, Google's getting in trouble.
Google just got in trouble for this.
If we put this into Gemini, I bet it would be like very diverse. But apparently, ChatGPT is a. Is not very diverse with its outputs.
Let me try. Like, yeah, it's. I was expecting one. I couldn't just make one.
Boring accountant says there are no double, triple, or four plus monitor setups. Yeah, all these people are working on like laptops or tablets or their phones, which is like not realistic at all. Come on.
A lot of coffee. There's a lot of coffee there.
I mean, people. These accountants have leather briefcases at their feet. Who carries around a traditional leather briefcase anymore? I haven't seen one of those since like my accounting professor in college.
Yeah. And nobody's talking to each other. They're all looking at their own screen.
They're all just staring at, well, that might be accurate.
Maybe
right?
They're watching the live stream of the podcast.
Yeah, maybe.
With no headphones on, just so they all can hear it at the same time.
David, we are out of time. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today, especially our live stream viewers. Subscribe to us on YouTube. You can join like 1.8 million people who saw us on YouTube last week. Yes, I'm not kidding. We had one of our YouTube shorts go viral, It was the story about the General Motors lawsuit against the city of San Francisco, where San Francisco is trying to say that they can tax GM's global net income because of the Cruise self-driving unit being in San Francisco.
And it's not 1.9 million views. It's going to break 2 million views.
Algorithms. One video. Algorithms are insane. It's like 700,000 on TikTok too. So that means like, you know, over 2 million people, or we had over 2 million views of that one 60-second clip. And most people are watching it all the way through. And I looked up the like the other analytics information, and it's like it, when I looked, it was like 17,000 hours of watch time. So you multiply the duration people viewed on average times the number of views, and you get total watch time for that one video. It's amazing. And that's all because of algorithms, right? It's like somebody likes it and they happen to be an accountant, and the algorithm figures out who else is an accountant and might like it. And we're actually getting a lot of people who are obviously not accountants and who obviously like have no grasp of the English language based on the YouTube comments.
The comments. I've never put a comment on a reel, an Instagram, TikTok. I've never commented
on old,
any of them,
David.
Ever.
We're, is that why? We are old. I just got on TikTok like last year and started like using it like recently once our videos started blowing up on TikTok.
I mean, thousands have put comments.
Yeah.
5,000 people have commented about this.
It's insane. So anyway, apparently our podcast now exists to create 60-second clips for TikTok and YouTube. we record for a whole hour talking about all these issues in detail, and it's distilled down into like a 60-second clip. The cool thing is that we ended up getting like over 1,000 new subscribers to our YouTube channel just because of that short. So hopefully it keeps working. And that some of you who discovered us on the short are now watching our full episodes and perhaps even getting CPE for it with Earmark. Don't forget, you can earn free CPE for listening or watching this episode. Download the Earmark app. It's free. You can get a free hour of NASBA CPE. Just take a 5-question quiz. We are releasing a new version of the app very soon. It is not janky. It is super smooth. It is incredible. It's like almost ready. We're beta testing it right now. I'm so excited. We've rewritten the whole thing. It was a huge task, but we wanted to clear all the technical debt off of our balance sheet.
I'm so pumped about maybe 2 weeks from now this goes live, and the stuff we get to do for the rest of the year for the app, for the Earmark app, and the improvements we make, and this whole list of stuff I've been building up for 2 years, we can finally do. I'm just
super awesome.
Pumped about this.
And Millennial Money Mom in the live stream said, I actually found you organically through a YouTube short. I was looking for QuickBooks info. It works.
Amazing.
Incredible. Like and subscribe. I need to get like a t-shirt that says that or something. You want to know the funniest thing, David? Is I was taking a video of my son who's 9, who watches like too much YouTube. I'm sorry to say, like I try to limit it, but he watches a lot, yeah. Like all these kids do. And I was taking a video of him and I was like, so Thomas, tell me about like something. And he's like showing me. And then at the end of when he's done, he goes, like and subscribe. And that's how I know he's done.
Subscribe.
He's like an AI that's been trained, right? He's consumed all these videos, and he notices at the end they always say like and subscribe.
You always, if anytime somebody films you, you
exactly.
Say
exactly. I'm like, well, you know, I'm not putting this on YouTube, right? Like and
well,
subscribe.
Send it to his, you know, you send it to grandma or something, and grandma will know if she wants.
She can.
To,
well,
to
she knows how to tap the like icon on photos, like in the shared album. So I guess it does work. Bye, everyone. See you next week.
Like and subscribe. Time for the classifieds. Most firm owners are busier than they want to be because they feel like they have to work long hours to keep their firms running. But according to CPA Ryan Lozanis, that's not necessary. Ryan built a multi 7-figure firm that didn't require him to work nights or weekends. And just 5 years after starting his firm, Ryan sold it to a major international organization for a hefty profit. His secret is a special 6-part system. And right now he's teaching 700 plus busy firm owners to implement this system in their own firms so they can scale revenue and spend more time with family and friends. learn more about Ryan's special six-part system that lets firm owners grow their revenue and their free time, go to futurefirmaccelerate.com/CAP. That's futurefirmaccelerate.com/CAP. Want to make learning QuickBooks Online a breeze for your staff or clients while pocketing some extra cash? RoyalWise.com's OWLS platform is the perfect solution with over 100 hours of in-depth QuickBooks training content spanning more than 40 topics. Join the partner program and become a vital link in the education chain. Share custom affiliate links with your bookkeeping team and small business clients and see the rewards roll in with every successful referral. You're not just earning cash, you're connecting your network to valuable CPE credits and lessons led by one of Ignition's top 50 women in accounting, Alicia Katz Pollitt. Enhance your service offerings and earn with each referral. Join today, royalwise.com/partner. That's royalwise.com/partner. Stop settling for slow payments and say hello to the future of AR with Forwardly. Accounts that use Forwardly can receive payments in less than 22 seconds. Yes, under 22 seconds via the newly launched FedNow network. And if your bank or a client's bank doesn't yet use FedNow, Forwardly will send the payment via same-day ACH for free. To get paid in under 22 seconds, go to Forwardly.com. That's Forwardly.com. Want to get the word out about your newsletter, webinar, party, Facebook group, podcast, ebook, job posting, or that fancy Excel macro you just created? Why not let the listeners of the Cloud Accounting Podcast know by running a classified ad? Hit the show notes for the link to get more info.